Well, we've been talking about straw bale gardening on Garden Talk for years, and it's time to catch up with the inventor of the method. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for spending some of your day with us. And back with us is Joel Karsten. He's traveled across the world introducing the straw bale garden method, and he's written a number of best-selling books on the topic. What are your questions about straw bale gardens? Have straw bales changed the way that you grow? We'll join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234 or send us an email, talk@wpr.org. Joel, it's so good to talk with you again.
It's good to be back on with you, Jill.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you're missing Lair like 2 years in a row.
Oh, well. He's already a straw bale gardening expert.
So he is. He does a straw bale, at least one straw bale every year. He's been doing it for a long time. I've tried a few times myself to mixed review, but mostly it's been my problem because I just haven't done it right. So I think we need to kind of, you know, go over the basics for people, of course. So for those who haven't tried it, why don't you explain the process?
Well, first of all, the name's a little bit elusive because when you say straw bale gardening, we're going to plant into straw bales, people think right away, well, how does a plant grow in straw?
Mm-hmm.
It's not really growing in straw. That's the trick, is the inside of the bale is going to become compost very quickly. And we're going to do that by this process we call conditioning. But it's really composting the inside of the bale. And you do this by adding a source of nitrogen, and then you add a little water, and you feed the bacteria that are already in the bale. And those bacteria quickly will colonize the bale, and you'll know this is happening. You can't see them, unfortunately, because you need a microscope for that, but you can feel them. They'll start to replicate, and as they replicate, they tend to warm up the bale. So the inside of the bale will get warmer than air temperature, and you know at that point that it's happening. The bale is conditioning. And after a couple of weeks, the bale will start to cool off again, and you know that colonization has been completed. And the inside of the bale is then going to have free ions and cations. What that means is the bacteria has broken down the cells of the straw and broken those cells back into nutrient molecules, things you would recognize like nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, molybdenum, zinc, iron, manganese. All of the macro and micronutrients that a plant needs to grow will now be available inside that bale from decomposed cells of the straw. So that's where the nutrients come from, not from us adding fertilizer all summer, but from the decomposing straw that releases its molecules for a new plant to absorb and be able to grow.
It's like magic.
Yes, it is. It is like magic. If you had a microscope, you could really follow along. But you just got to kind of trust the process that this is going to work. And if anybody does fail or not have as much success, it's usually because of that conditioning process. It's really important to get that process right, that first two-week process of breaking the bales down and letting nature sort of take its course. Oftentimes people will start too early. Like you and I might get excited because it's been warm out the last couple of days here in Minnesota and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So we might get started early. And then what happens is, the bacteria start growing, but then it gets real cold and it'll shut down that process and you don't get the full colonization. So you got to wait till it warms up. I usually tell people to target 20 days before your location's average last frost date. And that's when you would start this process. And that's usually going to give you a really nice weather window where you're going to get a few days up to 65 or 70 degrees. And that only takes, you know, 1 or 2 days of real nice warm temperatures like 70 degrees for that entire colonization to happen. But if you start a couple weeks earlier than that, you might not ever get warm enough outside temperatures in order to spark that growth of bacteria inside the bales. And once you get that part done, now we just plant right into the bales, you know, transplants like tomatoes, things that usually you would start in advance from seed, either in your greenhouse or in the house, or you'd buy it at the garden center. Those kind of things, you just take the pot off and you plant the roots right into the bale itself. If you're doing things from seed, peas and beans, squash, things like that from seed, usually you can just plant those seeds directly in the bale. If they're a big seed, you know, if they're as big as the end of your finger, you can push them right down into that bale of straw and they'll in 3 days, they'll start to germinate right out of the bale. If you're planting tiny seeds, however, like carrots or basil, for instance, those kind of things, you want to make a seed bed But what we don't want to do is introduce soil from our garden, because if you just put a shovel of soil on top of the bale, now you're going to bring along with that weed seeds, which we're trying to avoid. You might bring disease or insects that are harboring in that soil over winter. So we just use a little thin layer of potting mix that you buy at the garden center, and water that thin layer in, and then maybe put a little bit more on top so you get a nice nest of that potting mix on top of the bale. And then you seed your carrots or your basil or whatever tiny seed you're doing into that layer on the top, that one-inch little layer, and they'll root right down into the bale at that point.
So it
doesn't take very long.
The soil is just basically there so the seed doesn't go, like, all the way through the bale, right?
Right. Otherwise, you know, you drop a tiny little basil or a carrot, there's enough airspace in that bale that it could fall halfway through into the bale. But a big seed like a pea or a bean, you know, you poke those in with your finger and it's big enough that it'll hold right in position. And then as soon as it germinates, the roots hold it in place. So it's fine.
Then you're fine. So I think a question that we get a lot of times is, which side of the bale do you use?
Well, I like to put the bale so the strings are on the side. And that's sometimes people think, well, that doesn't make sense because the flattest part, the biggest surface of the bale is on the same side where the strings are. So I want that up. I got more surface area to plant. But the reality is we're going to plant the sides of the bale as well as the top. So if you have the narrow side on the top, you can get a row of whatever down the middle, and then you can also plant into the sides of that bale. If you plant the sides, of course, you're going to need to use transplants of some kind, something you bought in a flat that has a root already established. If you put a seed in the side of the bale, it'll want to grow up, and that's going to be planted way too deep, you know, if you planted it in the middle of the bale. So things you do in the side, I do lots of herbs I'll do in the side. I've done kale, other things that kind of bush out and will turn up. I've actually planted cabbage in the side of the bales, believe it or not.
Really?
And that works well. Yeah, that works well. So you're going to plant the top and the sides. I like to put the cut side of the bale. Now, if there's any farm kids out there, they'll know there's a cut side and a folded side on every bale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you rode on a baling rack when you were a little kid, you learned quickly, because if you bounce that bale off of your leg on the pokey side, on the cut side, you get a big rash on your leg.
That's right. So,
but city kids sometimes don't know that. But you put the cut side of the bale up, that prickly side. That's the side you want up. It's just much easier to get water to enter the bale and get your blood meal, if you're organic, or your fertilizer, if you're not organic, to get that to melt into the bale and provide the nitrogen for those bacteria down inside the bale.
So let's talk about that, you know, conditioning, as you call it. What do you do?
Okay, it takes about 2 weeks, a little less time if you're using like a lawn fertilizer that's got a lot of powerful nitrogen in it and it melts easily. If you're doing like an organic, usually blood meal is what we recommend for the organic gardeners, that takes a little longer because first the fertilizer has to be broken down by the bacteria, and then the nitrogen molecules can be used by other bacteria to facilitate this decomposition process. So it takes about, we recommend you give yourself 18 days if you're doing it organically before you're going to be ready to plant. If you're doing it using the more stronger fertilizer, like the lawn fertilizer, you can do that in usually ready to plant in 12 days. And this is starting now 20 days before last frost. So if you do the math with me here, you're actually going to be planting before your last frost. And people always wonder, how can I plant before my last frost? What if it freezes? You know, I still have potential frost for another 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But the advantage is that bale is nice and warm. You know, as it's decomposing, often these bales will get 135 degrees inside the bale. And then it'll cool down. You'll plant when it gets under 100, but it'll still be, you know, 75, 80, 90 degrees inside that bale for another week or two until you're way past your potential last frost in the spring.
Excuse me. I think I'm getting Larry's cold. Go ahead.
So the process of conditioning is really pretty simple. You know, the first application you're going to put on, you're just going to sprinkle it on, and we sprinkle this. We actually make a product now called Bale Buster. If anybody's, you know, concerned about what to buy, if you don't have a copy of one of my books that explains what kind of fertilizer you can use, that if you just go to your local store, you can buy. Or you can order our stuff called Bale Buster. And they sprinkle it on edge to edge, end to end, and you water it in. And initially when you first start, you're going to really wet that bale, put a lot of water on it, you know, until you almost see water coming out the bottom of the bale. So it probably takes, 2 minutes or 3 minutes with the hose on each bale. But after that, you're only going to add 1 gallon of water to each bale every time you add the fertilizer. And then in between days, you want to water also. So basically it's getting a gallon of water on each bale. That's like 30 seconds with your hose, is usually plenty. And then every other day, you're going to add the fertilizer. And by the 12th day, you'll see that bale will have heated up already and will have started to cool down by that 12th day and usually ready to plant. How do you tell if it's warm enough? Well, if you got a compost thermometer, that's wonderful. If you don't, just use your God-given meat thermometer, your hand, and shove your hand right down in the bale. And if it feels warm on your hand, you should be, if you're healthy, you should be 98.6 degrees. So if it feels warm on your hand, it's probably above 100 degrees in that bale still. So it's too warm to plant. But if it feels cool or even tepid, room temperature to your hand, then it's probably fine to plant. So you can go ahead and plant at that point. Usually that's about the 12th day. Plants are pretty forgiving. Usually what I tell people is if you're on the fence and you're questioning, is it too warm to plant in the bale or not, just put one thing in the bale. Don't plant your whole garden in one day.
That's a good idea.
If it's too warm, you might lose a bunch of plants. Where if you just put one thing in there and then just watch it, 6 hours later, if it starts to wilt, you know you're in trouble. Pull it back out.
That's
and
right.
Wait another day for that bale. Perfect. For that bale to cool down.
That's what I call science, Joel. So we're going to be taking a little bit of a break here for the news, but we'll be back with all kinds of more information. So stay with us. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and today is our annual chat with straw bale founder, a gardening founder, Joel Karsten. He has traveled across the world introducing this method and has written a number of best-selling books on the topic. Do you have questions about using straw bales in your gardens? Have you tried it, but maybe have not gotten good results? Well, tell us about it. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Joel, before we broke, you were talking about conditioning the bale. Did we get everything in on that?
I think we did. One of the questions that people often ask, however, is why? Why would you do a straw bale garden when you could just plant in your soil? Well, if you have a beautiful garden already with, beautiful, rich black soil, maybe you don't want to do straw bale gardening. But for anybody who's in a situation where they don't have good soil, this is a really great alternative. And you can do a straw bale garden literally on top of asphalt or concrete or on a rooftop. Or, if you got terrible soil or contaminated soil, you could put a barrier on the ground and then put bales on top of that to be able to have a garden in places where most people would never attempt to have a garden. There's a bunch of other big advantages. It's raised up off the ground. So you get the advantages of a raised bed for a $5 bale of straw rather than having to build actual raised beds. You also get a lot of moisture retention. A dry bale of straw will suck up and hold between 5 and 7 gallons of water. So that's like a reservoir, like a tank inside that bale. Try and pick it up once when it's fully saturated. That's all water weight inside there. So it holds a lot of water. Moisture is a big thing. The other thing is less weeding. There's no weed seeds in that bale. There might be a couple leftover oats or a couple leftover wheat seeds, but as soon as those sprout, you can pluck those out of the top. Sometimes there's none in there. If you got a farmer with a good combine, they won't leave any seeds behind. But if you do have any seeds, you pluck those out, and the rest of the summer, you're going to go without pulling a single weed in your vegetable garden, which for a lot of people who garden, that's the reason they don't have as big a garden as they used to, is because they hate pulling weeds all summer.
Very true.
You don't have to bend over as much. So for anybody with any kind of physical limitations, even as we get older, it gets harder and harder to bend over or get down on the ground. Or as my grandma Josephine used to say, getting down is easy. It's getting up where
right.
I have trouble. So it's much easier to garden from a physical standpoint. You also don't have those residual soil-borne diseases. If you get tomato blight, you can't plant tomatoes in that same soil for, what do they say, 5 or 7 years or something until that blight goes away. With straw bale gardening, you don't have to worry about that because you're going to get a new bale for your tomatoes. You're probably going to use new bales every year, and then you're going to use the second-year bales that you used for tomatoes last year. This year, you're going to use them for planting potatoes or carrots or beets or any of your root crops or cool season crops can go in those second-season bales. And so you usually get a 2-year rotation out of bales pretty easily. What's with straw bales? If you use hay bales, which will work, but hay bales usually only get 1 year just because they decompose really quickly. And it basically will become soil over one season, and you'll just have a little hump of soil there for the next year. So you can spread that around in your flower gardens or whatever and till it into the soil. It really helps improve the tilth of any soil. You know, if it's a sandy or a clay soil, it'll really improve that soil. So that's the basic.
We did get a couple of emails. Paul in Port Wing emailed us and was wondering, how do you stop ants from invading straw bales?
You won't. Just like ants come in a regular garden. Ants are going to go away with, they're going to capture and help decompose dead organic material. It's very rare that you'll see ants eating live plant material. Usually they're eating something that's dead. And they really don't have a negative effect. A lot of times they'll also eat aphids. So if you have any aphids in your garden, ants are going to be helpful. They'll help clear those out. So in most cases, unless it's fire ants, you know, I do hear from people, my southern gardeners, that they've gotten fire ants. And we do have a solution you can mix up and pour on there. It's Dawn dish soap and some orange oil in a gallon of water. It's actually the University of Georgia came up with this recipe. And you just pour it over the bale. Douse it really good, and it helps if you heat the water up. That also helps, and the fire ants will leave the bale at that point. So there is solutions for that, but in normal situations, if you're just talking about normal ants, they're really not going to hurt anything at all.
Okay, great. And Julie in Hixton emailed to ask how you can manage slugs in the straw bales. Last year, they decimated her carrots and her marigolds.
Yeah, slugs seem to be very cyclical. You know, if you get those years where you get a lot of sultry nights where it's hot and humid every night, the slugs in a straw bale will tend to thrive. There's a couple of solutions. You can use slug bait, which is basically iron phosphate, little tiny kernels of it, I guess you'd call it, pill-shaped kernels. You can sprinkle that around your bale and beside the plants, around the plants, and that will help prevent the slugs from crawling over that iron phosphate, because that will tend to kill them. You can use copper on top of your gardens. Like I've even seen people do a circle of copper pennies around a plant, and that will keep the slugs away. But some of the simplest methods are put a board on the ground right next to the bale. And then the next morning, early in the morning, just flip that board over, and you'll see a whole bunch of slugs have accumulated under that board. And you can squash them or capture them and put them in a bag and throw them in the garbage, get them out of your garden. Upside down, like if you got an orange and you cut the orange in half, just put the upside down orange halves on top of the bales. And in the morning, flip those over and you'll see a whole collection of slugs underneath those. So it's sort of real simple but practical ways. People will also embed little jars and then pour some beer in the jars. And those slugs will crawl right in the little baby food jar or whatever, and they'll drown in the beer. But some other people claim that's a waste of good beer. So I guess you never know.
But what a way to go for those little slugs.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, we've got a call from Jim and Nina. Go right ahead, Jim.
Yes, I was wondering about using the straw bale gardening, our fruit trees. Nina has a real bad case of clay for soil, and can it be used to season that clay to make it better?
Yes, absolutely. Use it right over top of the clay soil, plant in the bales. You'll see most of the time the roots of the plants, with the exception of things like tomatoes, which have a really deep root, those will grow down through the bale and actually probably try to grow into that clay soil. But in most cases, you'll have all the roots of your plants will be harbored inside the bales. So it doesn't even matter what soil you put it over top of. As I mentioned earlier, I've seen people do this on a concrete driveway. Or an asphalt driveway. So you really don't need much for soil at all underneath. It's just there to hold the bale in position. Sometimes if you have soil that has been a garden or has been a lawn in the past, you're going to get lots of weeds or grass growing between the rows of bales. So you'll need to deal with that space. Maybe put some landscape fabric down or some cardboard boxes, you know, thick layers. I like to keep the rows of bales about 5-6 feet apart between the rows to give you plenty of space for sun and for the plants to grow and expand. I've had lots of people call me and say, oh, I put them 4 feet apart, and now I can't walk down the rows between the bales because it's all full of plants. So don't make that mistake. Keep them plenty far apart. Give yourself plenty of room and cover that space in between. Then you don't have to deal, or you can mow it, I guess, if you wanted to, but then you can't have, like, squash, because squash are going to come off that bale, especially pumpkins, and crawl all over the ground. And then you have grass growing up through your squash, so that would be difficult. But otherwise, you'll be just fine. Clay soil won't matter at all.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jim. Good luck. I hope you
Thank you.
Yeah. It's speaking of, you know, kind of getting out of control, I think we've had a lot of callers who've said, I put, like, 4 tomato plants in my bale, and they're all over the place, right? Well, how do you judge what you should put into that bale?
You know, if you're doing hybrid tomatoes, the ones that have an indeterminate vine, so they'll just keep growing. You know, by the end of summer, they're heading towards your neighbor's yard up the street. So they get real long. Those, you only want to put one in a bale, mainly because they're going to take up a lot of space above the bale. It's not the space in the bale for the roots, but it's the space above the bale where they're going to grow the vines and hang on your trellis that you're going to put above the row of bales. It's going to fill in that space. And if you had more than one, what's going to happen is you're going to get the same total number of tomatoes, because you only have so much space for vine, and it's only going to collect so much sunlight. So your tomatoes will tend to shrink in size, and you won't have as many tomatoes per plant if you double stack them in a bale. Now, with heirloom tomatoes, you know, sometimes those heirlooms only give you 8 to 15 tomatoes on a plant, and they don't get that big. You know, they're determinate size. So those you could easily get 2 in a bale. But the big boys, early girls, things that are hybrid tomatoes that are going to give you a lot of tomatoes. I mean, you get 80 to 150 tomatoes off of one plant in many circumstances with these hybrids nowadays. Those you only want 1 in a bale. And then you're probably going to have to, at some point during the season when it gets real hot and you're really juicing a whole bunch of tomatoes on that vine, you probably have to water that bale twice a day.
Oh, okay.
So that's why an irrigation system, like a drip system that you can set on a timer, works really well. You just turn it on. You don't want to water a lot every time you water. Only add a gallon, gallon and a half, maybe 2 gallons at the most, and that'll replenish the reservoir in that bale. If you water too long, what happens, Jill, is water will run through the bale, and it'll carry out soluble nutrients. So it'll leach your nitrogen right out of the bale, and then your plants turn yellow and you end up having to add artificial fertilizer. Where if you just limit how much water you put on, don't put so much water on every time you water, you won't flush the bales at all, and you won't need to fertilize throughout the summer. So it has enough fertility in that bale itself.
And that's probably one of the mistakes that new straw bale gardeners make, isn't it? Too much water.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the biggest mistake new straw bale gardeners make, is they tend to overwater. You know, with a regular garden, you can water and then you can see a puddle build up around your plants. And they'll say, oh, I got a puddle. It's time to stop watering. You can never see that in a bale, because it's just running down out the bottom and it disappears. And a lot of times you don't even notice that you've overwatered. But yeah, anything more than a gallon or a gallon and a half per bale per application is probably too much water. It doesn't take very long. Think about your spigot's going to give you 2 gallons a minute, right?
Right.
But if you got a 10-bale garden, that's only 5 minutes of water at 2 gallons a minute, and you got a gallon on each bale, you know, pretty quickly. I'll have people that'll call me, and they'll say, I don't know about this straw bale gardening. I've been watering my garden for 2 hours every morning and every night,
and
it doesn't look good at all. And I tell them, I want you to hold a cold water hose over your head for 2 hours and call me back and tell me how you feel. You know, you're killing these poor plants from all this water you're putting on. It's leaching all the nutrients out, and your plants are starving for nutrients because of all this leaching. So.
Well, what happens when you have, like, a really rainy period?
You just turn the water off. Don't run your irrigation. I'm in Minnesota, and you know, you're not far away from me there in Wisconsin. Last summer, I did not even turn my irrigation on until the beginning of August, first weekend in August, because we had rains every week all spring and throughout the summer. And then early August, the rains stopped coming, and it got a little hotter, and I had you know, big tomatoes and eggplants and things. Then I, at that point, I started turning my irrigation on for 3 minutes, I think, on each zone early in the morning. I got a drip system, so each plant's getting about 3/4 gallon, probably. That was plenty. Got me through the season. By early September, mid-September, I shut the irrigation off, and that was it. The lowest water bill I've had in years for irrigating my garden.
Yeah, nice. Well, it was a, it was an interesting gardening year, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really a good season for me. I mean, a lot of people who soil garden had too much water early in the spring, and they got a lot of drown outs and a lot of, you know, disease problems because of so much water. But for me, it was a great year last year. So.
Yeah, it started very, very wet, very early, and then it definitely did dry out. So yeah, it was the best of both worlds, I guess.
Yeah.
Now tell us about some of the innovations that you've come up with to use bales, you know, like some of the, like the hoop houses and things like that.
Well, we do have plans on our website for these little greenhouses people can build about a little later than now. You don't want to quite get it up yet, but I call it an April greenhouse. In my manuscript for my book, I called it an April greenhouse. And my publishers wrote back and said, you can't call it an April greenhouse because, remember, we sell books in Australia, too, in New Zealand. So you need to come up with a different name. So I called it my six-week greenhouse, which
there
is really, it's kind of a shoulder season greenhouse. And you want to set it up about 6 weeks before planting day. And this just involves two cattle panels humped over. So you got $50 in cattle panels. And then you put some 4 mil poly that you can buy at, you know, any hardware store, painter's poly. You don't need the good stuff because this is only going to last for a year. It's only got to last for 6 weeks. And then you could use it again next year, probably. And then we put six bales inside of this little, these little humped up cattle panels. And these bales, once you start conditioning them, will get hot, and that warms your greenhouse. So I show you on the plans how you can build little end panels on the greenhouse. So it's a, like $100 investment for this greenhouse, but it's a great way to start your seedlings outside in a greenhouse rather than having to do them in the house. You know, if you get sunlight early spring, April sun is really bright, and, you know, by the time you get to the end of April, you get a lot of intense sunlight. So it keeps that greenhouse nice and warm. And you'll see your seedlings do really well with that bottom heat from the bales and then the natural sunlight outside. So a little tiny greenhouse like that, you can start 300 or 400 vegetable plants real easily in flats in that kind of a greenhouse. And then we do lots of innovation. I mean, we've had, you know, around the world, we have, I was just in Switzerland on vacation a few months ago, and it reminded me, I had this woman named Ushi who's lives on top of a halfway up a mountain in Switzerland, and terrible soil, you know, awful environment to have a garden. But she started straw bale gardening, where she just puts these bales following the slope. So it's a pretty steep slope, like, you know, 12-14% slope. And she grows her garden in on the side of a mountain in Switzerland, and it has grand success. I mean, all kinds of production. And part of her story is really funny because these miners walk up her road every morning to go to work, and they would laugh at her. There's this young blonde Swedish girl out there planting in bales, and they laugh. They said, this is never going to work. And then later in the season, she's standing there holding a whole bunch of vegetables in her arms one morning when they walk by. And she just smiled at them. And they got all interested in straw bale gardening after that.
I'll bet.
So on a steep slope, it works really well. You know, if you get an environment like one of the last callers, Jim, said, where they have just terrible soil, it's a great solution for that. I have a wonderful garden in New York, or in New Jersey, actually, right across the bay from Manhattan, in Kearney, New Jersey, the Kearney Community Garden. And they started 10 years ago, I believe. They have federally contaminated brown site underneath their straw bale garden. So underneath this garden, then on top, they have is contaminated soil. Then on top, they put this landscape, industrial landscape fabric. So it's like stuff they use when they build ponds as pond liner. They put this on top of the soil so no roots will ever grow down through and into that soil. Then they put wood chips on top and bales on top of that, and they've got a beautiful garden. This will be their, I think, their 11th year of growing in an environment where you've got, you know, turned a federally contaminated brown site into a beautiful community garden.
Yeah, that can be used all over the place. And I know you've talked about areas where maybe bales aren't necessarily available, but you can kind of make your own with a plastic tub, right? Or other other options.
You really can. If you're a DIYer and you don't have access to bales, it's really easy to make a bale out of leaves and grass clippings and, you know, your Valentine's Day flowers that are left over. Anything goes in that bin, make it in a, you know, dump all your Christmas decorations out and bring that great big plastic bin upstairs, put it in your garden, and then fill it full of all this leaf litter and grass clippings, whatever. Stomp it down really well, fill it up with water, put a rock on top so the stuff doesn't float out. And then the next day, tip that bin upside down, and you'll have this big square brick. And then you want to wrap that brick of organic matter with chicken wire. Everybody knows what chicken wire is, the little tiny hole wire. Wrap that around it and staple both ends onto a wooden stick, and then pound the end of that stick in the ground, and or you can twist that stick, actually, and that'll help clamp, kind of tighten that wire up around the bale like a clamp, and then pound the end in the ground. And you've got your own bale you made. And actually, those bales of mixed organic material like that will actually perform even better than a bale of wheat straw or a bale of oat straw. Because you got to remember, wheat only has a certain specific profile of nutrients in it, in the wheat itself. Same thing with oats or barley straw or whatever you're using. Where if you have a mixture of leaves and grass and all kinds of other, you know, weeds from your garden last summer or whatever, you put all those in just like it's a compost pile. Now you have a mixture of so many different nutrient molecules as that plant material decomposes and breaks down, that you have a wider variety of nutrients, and your plants will actually do even better in that bale than in a typical straw bale.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And wasn't there some area in Asia that you were doing, it was more like a pit?
Yes, we do. It's in Cambodia.
Okay.
It's actually a great story. If you're familiar with TED Talks, I did
yes.
a TED Talk about our project there. And we have one in Cambodia and one in the Philippines as well. But the Cambodia one's really interesting because they have floods really bad, everybody knows. And then they have drought right after the flood. So there's about a 5 or 6 month period where they can't grow fresh vegetables. And that causes lots of problems, especially for the very young kids that only have rice to eat during that 5 month period. They don't have any fresh vegetables. So how do you solve that problem? Well, you can't grow anything when it's raining 8 or 10 inches a day during the monsoon season. So what we did is we dug a pit in the farm, about 15 feet deep, 30 feet by 30 feet, and then piled all the soil from the pit right next to the pit. So we have a pit and a plateau. On top of the plateau, we build a straw bale garden. That plateau is always above the highest flood level. And they can plant into those bales because the bales drain so quickly that even though it rains 8 inches during the day, it'll stop raining. And within 10 or 15 minutes of when it stops raining, enough water, gravity has pulled water out of the bale and air comes back into the bale, which will keep the roots from rotting. If you plant it in the soil on top of that mound, you'd never get rid of the water because there's no drainage, and you'd get root rot in any vegetable that you tried to plant or grow. So in these bales, the water comes out, the plants do really well. So they grow squash and lots of leafy greens and this thing they call bitter gourd, which looks to me like a cucumber, but it's not. and lots of vegetables like that have the niacin and vitamin C and iron and some protein as well in these vegetables that can supply their family with enough fresh vegetables during the monsoon season. Then when the drought season comes, there's no water anywhere except they got this big giant pit with 50,000 gallons in it. They can dunk water out with a pail, bring it up on top of the mound, and keep their garden watered by hand, and their garden will continue to live even through the hot, dry season. You know, it gets 110 degrees during the day, and they don't have pumps and electricity in rural Cambodia like we have. You know, they have to do anything they're going to carry water. It has to be by hand. And there really is no water. They carry a little bit of drinking water, and that's all they carry. They can't plant corn or any fresh vegetables until that drought season goes away. Then when the growing season comes, they're wonderful farmers. They plant rice fields, and the rice fields do marvelously. And then to get rid of the rice straw, what do? They usually burn it. Now they don't burn it, they bale it. I sent them a YouTube link before I got there of how to make a hand baler. By the time I got to Cambodia, they had built a hand baler out of wood, and they put the straw in there, and they compress it down, make a bale, and then we put the bales on top of the mound. So when I started that project in Cambodia, we had no farmers that had ever even heard of straw bale gardening. Now we have over 10,000 farmers that are doing this throughout Cambodia.
That is absolutely amazing. If people need to know, they can get your books, right, if they want more information. You also have a great website,
absolutely,
too, right?
Yes. strawbalegardenclub.com.
All right. That is as easy as it's going to get. And Joel, thank you so much for being with us again. We really appreciate it.
Boy, that went by quick.
It did.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Joel Karsten. He's the founder of Straw Bale Gardening. And you're going to find more about that method at strawbalegardenclub.com. Next week, we're going to be at the Wisconsin PBS Garden and Green Living Expo live, and Lisa Johnson and Brian Huddleston will be there. Hope you can join us. Up next, you're going to hear an interview Larry did last year on growing ferns with horticulturist Moby Weinstein.